Hi, this is Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and we're going to be kicking off our first episode of our coverage from EMS World Expo 2011 in Las Vegas. You'll notice that I'm not actually on the rest of this episode or in the episode, and that's because I was actually busy editing the live video feed for most of the conference, so I only was able to get on a couple of segments during the course of the event, but still a great episode. Chris Montero from the EMS Garage representing his program and representing the Medicast, Ann Robinson. We've had her on the show before talking about community paramedicine. Chris and Ann are joined by Tom Boutelet and Kelly Arashin, and they're talking about what EMS can learn from the nursing profession. So check out this episode, our kickoff show from EMS World Expo 2011.
Welcome to EMS Expo, EMS World Expo 2011 here in Las Vegas. We're in Las Vegas and I'm so happy to be here today. I'm not going to talk a lot about the show yet. This is a joint podcast between EMS Garage and the Medicast. Joining me is Miss Ann, Caring Ann, and you all know her, so thanks for coming on and thanks for being a part. Also joining us, Mr. Tom Boutelet, and we have a special guest with Tom here in a minute, and we'll talk to her. And we're going to talk about the differences between nurses and paramedics, and we're going to talk about a cup. Yeah, it'll be fun. But we also like to thank our studio sponsor today. It's the American College of Emergency Physicians. Man, I'm going to mess this up because I'm a little out of practice and it's really hot here. It's the American College of Emergency Physicians, and they have done a great job at sponsoring the entire podcast studio today. A lot of the live streaming is brought to you by EMS World Expo, Zoll, and ASEP, and they've done a great job bringing us together. But today, this episode is sponsored by Physiocontrol, and joining me is Mr. Paul Satterly. Hello, sir. Dr. Paul Satterly. Sorry.
Sorry.
So tell us a little bit about who you are, and then let's talk about mechanical CPR.
Okay. So I'm an emergency physician. I work in an ER half my time. The other half of my time, I'm a medical director for an ambulance service that takes care of about a million people in the state of Minnesota,
wow,
about 50,000 transports every year, and about over 300 cardiac arrests every year.
Wow.
So we had this great population to really start testing stuff, trying things out, seeing if it's helpful and beneficial.
Did you guys buy Lucas devices?
We did, yeah, 2007. I have a cohort, another medical director, who really, at that time, saw the benefit, pushed the company to get them.
Right.
We've now got 36 in place, one on every ALS truck.
Nice.
And every cardiac arrest gets the Lucas, except for maybe conditions like early ROSC or too big or too small. The typical things you'd expect.
Right. And then, you guys are using the air-powered ones. Have you guys tried to go to battery yet?
We haven't. Primarily just because of a financial thing.
Right. Absolutely.
Realistically, the air-powered ones have maintained just fine.
And they've been good performers.
Right. And if we started replacing them, I'm sure we'd replace with the battery powered.
Right.
We haven't had to replace any yet. So
what are some of the benefits of using mechanical CPR over, say, just, all of us trying to go around a guy for 2 minutes?
The biggest one I can tell you, we operate in both an urban setting and a rural setting. In some of our rural settings, the first responder there is the sheriff, the one sheriff.
Right.
So we show up with our EMT and our paramedic, and then you have the sheriff. And you just can't, unless you're going to employ family members to help out. That just doesn't work in order to provide quality CPR in that setting. On the other side of it is when you have a lot of people roaming around, you may have more people that can do compressions, but I think with the mechanical compression, you're guaranteed to get consistent. What I want as medical director, exactly the compressions I want, consistently, right depth, right timing, no gaps, all that stuff. And I can't train. We have 80 first responder groups we work with. And for me to spend a bunch of time going to every one of those first responder groups to retrain and quality assure their CPR, it's a huge drain on our time because, we have 48,700 other calls that I have to check in on as well, in a year. So I can't just put all my time in cardiac arrest.
Right. So what have you seen as far as your return to circulation?
What we see is, and I'll show it because I have some slides that I present later at a different forum, but what we see is that if we put Lucas on, we get a lot higher ROSC rate early. It tails off later.
Right.
But if we get it on early, compared to the non-Lucas uses, we have this much higher ROSC rate. And there's a Swedish publication out there, a research article that says if you get ROSC early, those people have a much greater chance of surviving long-term versus the ROSC at 30 minutes, which I think to me, that just means you've saved their brain, and then you try to figure out, get their heart going again.
What do you consider early, just out of curiosity?
For us, it's under 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. So we're talking after the first few cycles.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we've got scenarios where you get ROSC again, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Those people notoriously don't do well, and I think it's just that brain has taken too much of an injury.
Sure.
But right now it's really, we have 600 uses of the Lucas. It's hard for us to compare non-use and use. The best thing probably would be is if we could go back and compare pre-implementation and post-implementation. But as everybody knows, since 2005, there's been so many changes to cardiac arrest, it's going to be really hard to compare apples to apples. So you're stuck.
I think one of the most important developments that has come out recently is the knowledge that minimizing the delay between stopping compressions and shocking leads to a much higher ROSC rate as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm wondering, have you measured what your ROSC rate is prior to the application of the device? Because if it's waiting 15 minutes into the cardiac arrest, we would normally think that's a patient with a fairly poor prognosis.
Right.
Yeah, no, we haven't measured that. Part of that is we're getting more comfortable with using the software to look at what our arrest has done using the monitor. That's going to be the best way for us to measure that interval, and we're still working on trying to sort through that.
I like that, too. We have that technology in Hilton Head Island, and we haven't really started using it to QI our cardiac arrests yet, but I saw Dana Yost's presentation in Baltimore and was really psyched about it, because I know just from being the CARES registry site coordinator for my department, if you look at these cardiac arrests, you would think, well, we know we're supposed to be shocking every 2 minutes. We're not. No way.
Yeah.
Without QIing it and looking to see, are you really following a two-minute cycle?
Yeah.
And if you look at it on a graph, you would like to see a shock every 2 minutes
right.
if the patient's in persistent VF.
Yeah.
You don't see that. The reality is you're going to see shock, 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 you know, 5 minutes of no shocks, and then another cluster of shocks, and some they're going to give a ventilation prior to the shock. That's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so really without looking... I got a kick out of, I think it was Dana, I don't want to misattribute this, but I think he said, it's the disparity between what we remember happening. Oh, it was Houston. It was the guys in Houston. I was at the webcast from Houston where they used the same technology. It's basically saying, I don't know if that's what they would have liked to have happened or if what they remembered had happened on the call, but it's objective data. You can't argue it. It's like it's obvious what happened and how long the delays were, and I think it's good. It holds a mirror up to your system and lets you know exactly how you're performing.
Yep.
And if you don't measure it, you can't improve it. So,
Dr. Satterlee, I know you have to run because you're going
Thank
to the
you.
Physio University. And if you want to hear more about this, they can go over there and
Absolutely.
Hear
yeah,
your
I'm
presentation.
Happy to talk about it.
And do you guys, is that online yet?
Yeah.
Do they put it on?
I think it is. And I can find that resource and maybe we'll
I think
you're
great.
Put it out.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for
Dr.
taking
Satterlee.
Me today.
I appreciate it.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Nice to meet you, Ann.
Don't forget your mic.
I won't. I'm going to walk way far away without this.
Well, while we. The mic. There you go. live TV. So while he's leaving, I'd like to again thank our studio sponsor today, American College of Emergency Physicians, while Kelly comes up. And we're going to talk about the differences between paramedics and nurses. Come on up. Oh, yeah. You can get in the shot. It doesn't matter. So, all right. The other day, here's my shtick. The other day, I'm standing in Ace Hardware in Las Vegas after we went by the Liberace Museum, which I really wanted to go into, but I couldn't because they wouldn't let me. I don't know why. We're standing there, and there's this wall of mugs, and it's every profession, you know. There's plumber, there's firefighter, of course, there's cop, there's two nursing mugs. There's, like, one where they care, and then one where they're really tired, I don't know, something
really
like that.
Really don't care.
And then, so I'm like, there's got to be a paramedic or an EMT, mug, and, no, there's one with an ambulance on it, and it says... Proud to be a firefighting, life-saving, people and pet rescuing emergency worker. This is it. This is all the respect we get. Emergency worker. Well, yeah, they did. So on the back of it, in my days on an ambulance, I've never used a fire hose unless the fire department was there and they needed help. I've never worn a hard hat. And oh, you're shooting it. Oh, perfect. Okay. I've never used a hard hat. And I've rarely used an axe. And that was only unless I had an axe to grind. So it brings me to the point of, why do we not get any respect? I mean, seriously, why do the nurses get it all? I mean, other than, you know, the obvious, but...
Because we have her name figured out.
Well, I know opinions differ on this topic, but I think it boils down to a couple of things, and the first is education. Nursing took charge of their profession, and they do their own research, and they publish their own peer-reviewed journals, and they're degreed. And so it's a fully qualified, legitimate healthcare profession. Kelly, for example, is in postgraduate studies. She's already a clinical nurse specialist, and she'll be an acute care nurse practitioner come December. It's been a long road, but she's constantly progressed through education. And I think if we want that same level of respect, it's going to be earned. In the first place. And I think Skip Kirkwood says it best. We're so busy with the inside baseball, we want to nitpick who's an EMT B versus an I versus a P. And so instead of following, say, the Canadian or Australian model where you're an intensive care paramedic or an advanced care paramedic, you're different varieties of paramedic, and then the public would know what to call us, and we would have an identity like a firefighter or like a police officer.
Right. So, Kelly, I forgot to introduce you. Kelly, what's your last name? Remind me of your last name.
Arashin. Arashin.
Arashin.
Yeah. Kelly's fine.
Thank you, because I couldn't pronounce it either way.
That's okay.
And you're a nurse, and you're finishing your master's.
I already actually already have
your master's. You're going for your clinical.
Yeah,
sorry.
I'm sorry. Postgraduate.
See, that's
yeah.
Right. I'm right. She's like the doctors of nursing.
Right.
Yeah. That's cool. So, what do you think about this? Is he right? I mean, obviously, since you guys are dating and whatnot.
He is, but, I mean, a nurse, and you will agree, I mean, nursing is still trying to figure it out because we haven't figured out entry into practice. We're adding another terminal degree that is under huge debate that even the American Medical Association is fighting because, literally, there's a new doctorate of nursing practice that will yield doctor nurses, and they don't want us to use the term doctor, so because...
Because they stole it.
Because they think doctor means medical doctor, but yet right. you have dentists, we call doctors. We have podiatrists, we call doctors. We have, you know,
we have
so
rocket scientists, we call doctors.
The only thing is that a nurse is a nurse. You can be an LPN and you're called a nurse. You can be an associate degree nurse and you're a nurse. You can be a bachelor degree nurse and you're a nurse. That's the only difference. But we still have our own turmoil and drama in nursing. So to the extent that...
We don't use axes
and helmets. We still have a lot of turmoil and we have a lot of issues. I mean, we have been fighting about entry into practice probably for 40 or 50 years. And here we are adding another degree to confuse the public and nursing. And we still are trying to fight what's the minimal entry into practice. So you guys aren't alone. You guys are, you know, whether you have a P or an A or a B or whatever, and you're a medic or an EMT, we're doing the same thing.
So, go ahead. I know you have something to say.
Yeah,
I knew you were going to say it. Go ahead. What do you have?
No.
Come on.
Just
say it. No, you don't. Why? It's Jamie's show. He's going to get all the credit for it, so go for it. Or not.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And this is...
I mean, we look like we figured it out, but we really haven't.
Well, and I agree with Tom when it comes to the education. When you're looking, and I've been working with EMS for the last couple years with some training and education classes, and I think that's a big piece is the difference between training or education or what that looks like. And, you know, what does it take for us to help move that in the right direction for EMS? Then I think about training and what can we do to train together? And
right.
I think just collaborating on our training efforts. So as professionals, healthcare professionals, we work better together if we actually do some of the training together.
I also think you don't see volunteers in the... And I mean, I'm not saying anything negative about volunteers, but what other profession can you have volunteers?
This is
in
a
your
huge
system.
Pandora's box.
I know, and I'm like the non-EMS professional.
Yeah,
I'll never be invited back on the podcast.
It's a very,
but I mean,
very difficult
that's
topic.
Another, that is a difficult topic, but you can't have volunteers. The only time you can see volunteers, but they're already licensed professionals,
yes.
And that's because they're going somewhere else and volunteering.
Right.
But you cannot have someone being a volunteer and having a lesser educational background and be able to perform the same skill.
Yeah.
There is at least a grain of truth that to increase the educational requirements for paramedic increases the length of time and the cost to become a paramedic. And so people that have a real job already and a real career already will be less tempted to invest their own time and money to that level of education to be a volunteer and perform those services for free. That's just common sense that it would be that way. And so I think the fear is if you increase that requirement, then they're going to be an EMS system without paramedics. And what does that mean politically? And so it's tough. It's really an interesting dilemma, and I'm not really sure how it's going to be solved.
Well, Tom Dick wrote an article recently, within the past couple of years, about this exact dilemma in our industry. Every town has an attorney, and they're paid. Every town has probably an accountant, and they're paid. But it would be tantamount to those type of professionals going out and hanging out a sign saying, free legal service,
right?
The people that are there to get paid for it aren't going to be able to compete, and that guy's not going to be in business very long. So our business model's already broken. We talk about reimbursement on my show quite a bit, about how the reimbursement for what we do is poor, poor, poor. It's poor across medicine, but for what we do, we get paid per call or per haul. We don't even get paid per call. We get paid if we take you to the hospital. That's right. Already a broken
model.
Right,
and it's going to get worse.
Exactly, exactly.
But I agree, Nina. I mean, I think that the true factor in this is more collaboration. And, speaking your previous guest and talking about the outcomes, and it has to do with not being separate entities in all these systems of care. But if we were educating more closely together to work more
yes.
synergistic instead of, well, you do the first part and then drop them off and then we do our part and then we're done and it's more collaboration, because that's how processes should be. They should fit like puzzle pieces, and I think education would be better. And I think that would also raise, going from workers to professionals, raise that level of professionalism.
And there's certain problems
and dilemmas that are inherent in the current model, because we all know that the current healthcare system can't sustain itself the way that it's been done over time. And one of the tenets of the EMS 2.0 movement is saying EMS ought to be more than taking a patient to the hospital. We ought to be able to triage them and determine whether or not they need to go to the hospital or determine the best place for them within the healthcare system.
Yeah, but then nurses get all pissy about that because we're stepping on their territory. Like, okay, so now, thank you, because that's a great segue into the next topic. So here's the coming up topic for right after I do the, I want to do the promo here in a sec. What was your opinion of EMS before you met us? And before you, did you even have a clue when you first started in the ER, things like that? Though I want to get that, and then we're going to talk about our perspective of nurses and where I think it's changed over time. And I don't want to say we're becoming more sophisticated, but we are. So anyway, real quick, I want to say thank you to our innovation sponsor, Road ID. And Road ID is a public safety product. There we go. Public safety product that they put in the hands of first responders to really help you if you're out there running or doing something. Greg Fries endorses this. And we're going to actually give you a chance to get two of them. We can show them? Okay.
Yeah.
It's right here.
We're gonna give away two of them.
Yes. It's an anklet or a bracelet or however you want to wear it. You can put it on your sneaker. There are many, many ways you can do it. You can put it on a belt if you're hiking, whatever. So we're going to give you a chance to win one.
Oh, cool.
We have two available. Yep,
am
two
I
available.
Eligible?
No, you're on the podcast. Can you tweet it right now?
Yes.
The first two people to tweet, I'm checking out at Road ID, and that's at R-O-A-D-I-D, at EMS World Expo. Will win their very own Road ID. So tweet that right now. I'm checking out at Road ID, and then make sure that you do the hashtag EMS World Expo, and we're going to send that off to you. Hopefully the people in the social media lounge will be able to find out who won that, and between them and Road ID, we'll get that off to you. So thanks a lot. Thanks to our innovation sponsor. So cool. All right, so what was your guys' impression of paramedics and EMTs? Before, like, your first day in the ER, you're like, who are these schlepping guys?
They drive the ambulance.
Well, I had a kind of idea, because I've been a secret little EMS whacker all my life. I grew up watching Emergency, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a paramedic or a nurse. And then, so I already knew kind of what they did, and then in my younger days, I did. I kind of rode along with a friend.
Are you a friend?
No.
Who's this friend, a man or a woman?
A guy friend. Up in in northern Baltimore County, and I really was like, wow, this is really cool. I loved Carnage, and I just it was very rural. And I was actually working at Shock Trauma, Shock Trauma at the time,
nice.
And the paramedics were hired there to work. And they were called trauma techs at the time. And then I was out and about kind of doing little ride alongs. So I knew what they were doing. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. So when I went into emergency nursing, I already knew what medics could do.
Okay.
So I
How
didn't
about
have
your cohorts in the ER. I mean,
treated them like crap.
Okay. All right.
Treated them bad. And I had worked in an ER in Maryland, and they had some good relationships. And then I came to Hilton Head, and most of them didn't treat paramedics very well.
True.
Most of them treated them really bad and treated them like they didn't know anything. And I found that really kind of different. It wasn't that way up north. At least in my experience, wasn't like that.
It was different.
It was very different because we really listened to what they said. If they said the patient was X, Y, or Z, then you knew the patient was X, Y, or Z. I mean, you listened, you took report from, you knew that they knew what they were doing. But then we came down, I came to Hilton Head, and they were just like, they took report like this. They didn't listen. They would come and give you a face-to-face report. And I was like one of the only ones, and they're like, why are you listening to them? Like, because they've just had the patient for 20 minutes. And they're giving me report, and they may have some really important information. So, and it was very interesting, and it was funny because people would say, you're just really nice to us, and you actually listen to what I have to say. And I'm like, well, you just took care of the patient for 20 minutes. Of course I'm going to listen to you.
You might know something I need to know.
And it was
maybe you did a medical intervention that saved this guy's life.
Exactly.
I don't know.
So, I quickly got a reputation of being somebody that actually listened to them and being nice. And I'm like, well, I'm not being nice. I am nice, but it's my job to listen to you.
I guess it worked on me.
Yes. I did. Aww. Well, 11 years later.
So she tells it that she asked you out, and then you tell it that you asked her out? Or is that vice versa? I don't know.
Well, it is a fact that she gave me her email address.
Nice. Yeah. Like on a glove?
On a little piece of paper.
Yeah, but he's the one that got weak-kneed and tachycardic every time he saw me and tongue-tied and couldn't even speak to me.
So he couldn't even give you a report when you asked for a report?
And all you would go is, patient.
Yeah, he's like,
You can grab a 4x4 and wipe my mouth and be like, stop drooling.
So, Anne, you come from a different aspect of healthcare, and I've heard your story, but many people have not. What did you think about us?
So, being in healthcare for almost 15 years, until I started immersing in EMS the last 3 years, I didn't even know the difference between a paramedic and an EMT. I just thought they were each in their own and it exchanged. But I didn't work in the ER. I worked more OB. And if we had a paramedic bring in a patient, we automatically took over because no one wants to deliver the baby.
Right.
Just the OB nurses do that. Even the ER docs don't even want to
do
that.
They're like, we don't touch babies.
So I didn't ever have that opportunity to have that relationship or build an opinion about it. But now I think totally different. But I immersed into it. I went on ride-alongs and just started spending time.
You told me that one of your most eye-opening things when you were doing the ride-along is, well, these people actually have protocols and standards, and they do a lot of stuff.
There's a whole book, and they actually follow them.
And even though she's a nurse, I wouldn't let her start at these.
I was so mad. But he would let me deliver the baby.
I was like, any babies born today, I'm sure they would be happy to let you do. Well, and so what was your, maybe you're more sophisticated, what's your opinion of nurses been maybe since you started?
Let me preface this.
Or how it's changed.
Yeah, well, it's changed. It's changed quite a bit. And I'm not proud of this. I think it's unfortunate. But when I went through paramedic school, and I went through a very respected program, either between the peers that I was with during the program or little things that the instructors would say or things that happened during clinical rotations, So here's me knowing really nothing. I should be soaking up knowledge and learning from everybody that I associate with in healthcare. I think I had a little bit of an attitude like, yeah, the nurse listens to bowel sounds and changes the bedpan. And okay, this is not winning me any fans in the nursing world. Okay, and what I'm saying is, looking back at that 15 years later, I was the ignorant one. I didn't realize all of the tools that they brought to the table, and I didn't realize how little I actually knew. And so if I had to be taken care of by myself 15 years ago, I'd be scared to have a new paramedic take care of a loved one or anything like that. Because one thing that I think is really unfortunate is in most EMS systems, as soon as you get your paramedic card, it's like, there's your ambulance. Ta-da! You know, you might have to do X number of ride-alongs, but the reality is you haven't seen a tension pneumothorax. And to this day, I occasionally ride along with paramedics that have got, you know, 5-6 years on the job, and they're like, well, I think we might have to decompress this chest. I'm like, do you see any ear hunger? Is the patient hypoxic? You know, think, man, think. You know, don't do it just now. Yeah,
protocol book?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Asking versus critical thinking.
Well, and, yes. And it takes a while, and it takes a lot of experience to build up that general gestalt about a patient and who's sick or not sick, and just patient assessment in general, and learning from errors, and hopefully learning from other people's errors, and just having a mentality that you're a lifelong learner and always want to know more about this profession and more about patient care and more about the house of medicine, whether you're a nurse or a paramedic or a physician. It doesn't matter. We're all here ultimately to save a patient's life, hopefully, in those rare instances where those critical actions are needed. But those are the times that they really are needed. And it's not enough to say, hey, I did a good job on the other 95 calls. It doesn't matter at that point in time, because this was the one where your actions would make a difference between life and death. Did you know what to do, or didn't you know? Did you hesitate, or did you screw it up? And so we really have to target our training and our expertise and our experience for those. I like it. It's from the risk management world, but the low frequency, high risk, no time to think event. Are you prepared for that? And we need to be, because it could be, you know, actually, I can't even talk about it because I'll get emotional. But we experienced a pretty significant family emergency. And let me tell you, the public we serve is us. And it could be any of us at any time, and that's why it's important. And we need to be cognizant of that at all times.
But it's sad, because sometimes he will tell me about an interaction that he had with a nurse, and it's a good one, and that's the exception. In my own institution, my own hospital.
I would assume that they all know that you were dating.
Everybody knows. Yeah, it's common knowledge. We live on a 12-by-5-mile island.
All
in
right,
a 93-bed hospital.
Well, I also, it needs to be said, a lot of that is because there's been so much turnover that they don't know me. Any nurse that's been around me for the past 10, 15 years would trust what I say or understand.
But that's not an excuse, because, so what do we do?
Right. A nurse should, you're taking report from a paramedic that's just had the patient, say 15, 20 minutes or whatever. The lack of respect or the lack of valuing the fact that you just...
We're not always angels either.
Right.
That's
true. But the point is, you know, our relationships are anything but positive.
So how do we start breaking down those barriers? Because I would assume, and I've gotten a really good history lesson about nursing and how it started and whatever. It's the history of how nursing kind of started and maybe how the physicians, I'm sure physicians probably treat you just as poorly as we
worse,
get treated.
Worse.
No.
Oh, yes. They're old school physicians.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Subservient.
Really?
Yes. Wow. There's still physicians that believe that you're there to basically just do whatever they say to do, and you're not there to think or...
And you know what's weird, though, is we have this weird divide, because I feel like physicians respect us in a weird way, that they're like, oh, I mean, I've had more physicians have better interactions than I've had nurses in 22 years, because they're like, so, I mean, I had my best interaction was a busy level one trauma center, brought a patient in, the doc leaves and comes into the report room and goes, what did you guys do? And he sat down and he just wanted to hear. I'm like, you're talking to me?
Like,
here's what we did, you know? But that kind of respect, I mean, why do we have that, and what has happened? I mean, are you guys just trying to make us pay our dues? No, I'm teasing. I mean, so where is the...
We're done.
We're done? They said 5 minutes. Oh, man, I'm talking. All right. Well, I'm getting the hook. So, Kelly and Tom, thank you guys so much. I hope we get to hang out this week in Vegas and maybe do dinner or something and talk more about this, because this is fun for me. I love finding out why it's so hard for us, but in the end, we're just all people. And I think if we would just take that thought into everything we do, it'd be so much easier. Now you're going to make me cry. All right. And for the Medicast.
The Medicast, yes.
TheMedicast.com. Thank you very much. This is the joint opening day episode from EMS World Expo 2011 from the show floor live. I'm Chris Montero, Geeky Medic on the EMS Garage. Ann's filling in for Jamie right over there. Medicast.com. Scene Safety, BSI. I'll give that him that. And we'd finally like to thank our sponsor for the podcast studio today, ASEP, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and this episode sponsor, Physio Control. Thank you guys, and we'll see you really soon on the next episode of EMS Garage and Medicast. But coming up next is EMS Leadership with Chris Sabalero, and I think Nancy Perry's coming on, so it'll be a really good one.
That's going to wrap up this episode of the Medicast. I want you to stay tuned this coming week and next week to medicast.tv. You'll be able to catch all of the video recorded segments from EMS World Expo over released in the studio video feed at medicast.tv. So we'll be able to catch all the Medicast episodes, but also all of the EMS Garage, EMS Leadership, Educast, Standing Orders. There were just a ton of shows being produced there, and you'll be able to catch all of the coverage from EMS World Expo and all of our short segment interviews over at medicast.tv in the coming weeks. Again, you can find links to everything discussed in this episode over in the show notes for this episode at medicast.com/blog. And don't forget to get back in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. Send those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. More to come soon. And again, stay tuned to medicast.tv for our continuing coverage recorded at EMS World Expo 2011 in Las Vegas.